press play.
Curtain up and now we're in.
It's time to taste in
the shade and tea to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Ooh, that's a tweet. Did they book?
Who got nominated?
They optioned no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today? Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama. Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
live,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, this is only the second twin talk of 2025, which means there's a lot to talk about for us twins today. I feel like Giselle and Robin all of a sudden on the Reasonably Shady podcast for some reason.
The Reasonably Shady. You know, I've never listened, but you did attend the live event. Before we get to that, I do want to say,
oh my God,
I feel like every time we have a twin talk, we're like, it's been so long. It's just, there's been so many people to talk to.
That's the thing. And we are talking.
And this one almost didn't happen.
Oh. Yeah, y'all are lucky.
We almost had a different interview tonight.
Y'all are lucky. So we had a couple reschedules or cancel, you know, et cetera.
Yeah.
But we are talking on our Patreon Drama Plus. So y'all have heard about it. We talk about it at the beginning of every episode, but at patreon.com/drama podcast. For $5 a month, you can hear about extra bonus episodes of us talking. Okay. Anyway, Dylan, are you well?
I'm well. I mean, listeners will hear I have my annual Sarah Michelle Gellar nasally congestion, the most interesting thing to talk about on a podcast in the world, sickness that tends to happen every single spring. Remember last year I was sick like February and March? It's happened again. Despite being on two different rounds of medication, I'm still rather ill. Although I will say there might be a reason why.
What's the reason?
We learned late last night that the majority of the people on the bachelorette trip that we were on also got sick with seemingly a strong common cold.
Right. Okay, wait. Are you saying that Ms. Rona paid us a visit on the bachelorette trip?
I'm saying Ms. Common Colda.
Oh, I think you sound a lot better now that I told you to elevate your vocal on the recording.
Right, because if I didn't, I'd be talking all the way down here.
No, that doesn't even sound like how you normally talk. Like you truly sounded ill before. So thank you for pushing through. Okay, so Dylan, I did go to a Giselle Bryant live show that I was promoting on the pod.
You promoted. Yes, you promoted on an episode of the podcast.
Yeah, and on the Instagram and the Twitter and or the X, whatever. And
you were invited.
Well, kind of, sort of. But Giselle is a star. This is Giselle Bryant from Real Housewives of Potomac, y'all. She did a 21 Shady Questions live show at City Winery, which is kind of where the Bravo community goes for their live experiences, excursions, etc.
I feel like it's either City Winery or it's Chelsea Table and Stage.
Those are the two. That is 100% accurate. And there's something soothing to me about a City Winery.
I've never been.
They're a chain, believe it or not.
Right. I knew that.
There's almost like a comforting Whipplebee's vibe to it where like you might be in a different city, but you're home.
Mm, like an Olive Garden. You can always expect the same decor.
I like the O Garden reference. But Giselle has such great star quality. She really was doing the most. It was the most performative Giselle I've seen. She was rapping. She was dancing. Now, did she ask or answer 21 shady questions? Well, no, but there were 21 topics that she went through. Sans PowerPoint, sans any slides. It was kind of interesting. If I was producing the show, I would have had her do a slideshow and actually pose these 21 shady questions to the audience. But she's amazing. I just love her.
Do you think it's a scripted evening?
It was scripted. For sure.
Because I know that it was the day of Karen Huger's, would you call it the conviction that went down?
Yeah, the decision, I guess.
Decision? Yeah.
The judgment.
Judgment. It was judgment day for Karen Huger when you went. And I can only imagine what the energy was in the room, especially because there were other Real Housewives of Potomac there.
There were.
Including Shasha.
Shasha, Ms. Charisse was there, the champagne room queen. She was shouting that she's the real grand dame. And so was Giselle. And I was kind of annoyed by that.
She tends to pout that around.
Ashley Darby was perched. And I did meet her for the third time.
And would you say this was the most positive encounter?
I would. She was tickled that I asked about her boys, her sons.
Didn't she turn you inside? You know what? Thank you so much for asking about that.
She did. She did. She did. And she's great. And but Giselle is clearly beloved by the network. There were Bravo producers, execs from other shows. They love her. They clearly were there to support. And they were all giving little tea. I could hear them chattering with other people around, giving kind of like the scoop on who's coming back next season, episode numbers for certain other franchises, et cetera, et cetera. I overheard one of the producers saying, who's coming back on this season of Potomac? But I recently saw a news item go out that they're actually delaying filming for a month as they kind of rethink things.
I think that's wise.
So I do too, in a way. And we need to discuss Karen Huger being locked up raw as we record this. But the reunions were amazing.
They were good, but I feel like they were very specific to Karen and then the Mia. And I suppose also the new Stacey.
But Dylan, they were so funny. Like Giselle was so funny. Wendy was funny. Ashley got some digs in. Andy was having a ball.
You're right. I am never like too much of the same thing. Like when I see that it's the same cast back for another year, I always think, ah.
Yeah.
Like without someone full time that's new, or maybe like a fresh friend added in, I just constantly want to be entertained. And a lot of these women who have been on since the beginning, I don't want to say their storylines have run dry, but I don't necessarily think they're bringing a ton of new, interesting pieces to the show, which is why I think that this like Love Hotel situation is interesting with Giselle and Ashley and Luann and Shannon Baydour. That
your friend who you haven't met yet.
Yes, yes. Is it Baydour or is it Badour?
It's Badour.
I say Baydour because former co-host of The View, Michelle Collins, which I listen to her daily broadcast show that's through Patreon, the Michelle Collins show, her mother says Baydour. She has like a lot of funny pronunciations of things. She's like
that's hilarious.
Yeah.
We love a funny mispronunciation. Only when it's clear that someone has no idea that it's...
Right. If someone's, you know, if there's like a microaggression or like a racial thing going on with someone's...
Obviously.
...mispronunciation, it's not funny, but agree. It is very, very funny.
Like, it's even like on Real Housewives of New York, like, you know, went during like the Carol, Luann...
Perfect example, yes.
Well, there's two. There's Luann calls Sonia Sonia.
Right.
And always has. And Luann pronounces Carol's last name Radzivel,
right?
Which apparently is the real pronunciation.
Yeah.
Oh, but it's everyone too else says good. Radzivel.
It's too good.
Oh, I miss them. I miss them. But anyway, no, I love the Potomac reunions. Salt Lake is allegedly already filming, which I kind of feel like they maybe should have waited a second too. I don't know. I just feel like their lives are all about the show. That's probably a hot take, considering it's our best Housewives franchise we have right now. But Salt Lake filming in New York. What's going to happen with New York? I honestly, if we never saw them again, I'd be fine.
I would be fine too. I forget about it. Like we were talking about this with Marty Gold Cummings. Like,
oh,
it's just past its prime. And this, they tried this new experiment. I don't see any way forward. I mean, did you see that Abe and Aaron Leachy, however you say it,
Brynn, that's how I say it, yeah.
And then I think one other person have all started podcasts, or maybe I was.
Yes. No, you're right. There's actually four that were announced in 1 week. It was Aaron and Abe, Brynn, Gia Giudice.
Oh, gosh.
Who's Teresa's daughter.
Right.
And then there is one more. Why can't I think of it? Oh, my God. It's gonna kill me. It's somebody who's on an active show. It's a newer cast member. Oh, my God. It'll come to me. But, yeah, I really... Friend and podcasting friend Gibson Johns actually just put out a tweet about this last week about how... We don't need more Bravo podcasts. Like it's, you have the show to tell your story. That is your platform. We're not saying like, don't have a business, but when your show is about your show,
right?
It's just not right. Like Paige, he didn't actually mention this on his show, but Paige DeSorbo from Summer House and former Summer House cast member Hannah Berner have a podcast where they don't ever talk about Summer House. It never comes up. It's a rare moment when Paige will even be like, oh yeah, like I was filming this weekend or something. It never happens.
And the reverse is true with Summer House, because Paige even was saying it's just part of her life she doesn't talk about during filming of Summer House because of the complications around Hannah and Kyle Cook. And I think that's actually really savvy of her to keep things separate. I will say, though, I do think, not to mention her again, but I do think Giselle keeping her podcast that is a little bit more separate. There was like one live show on the show, but I feel like that's par for the course with, I think it's... an astute point that Gibson made
It is. I mean, he also made the point that, like, and forgive me, because I actually don't listen to any Bravo podcast with the exception of Giggly Squad, because I just feel like it's the same reason I follow Nary, a Bravo star on Instagram, because I really like to see them as the characters they're presented to me when I'm watching their show or Watch What Happens Live or whatever. I just feel like too much of a good thing just really can spoil something. But,
Yeah.
you know, during Scandoval, Sheena had her podcast. Lala had her podcast. I think Katie Maloney started a podcast. They were
Right.
all talking at the same time.
Stassi.
Stassi, exactly. Exactly. I think Dodie maybe even dabbled with podcasting.
Oh, that's
So
crazy. I wouldn't know, but
it's nuts. And Gibson was also making the point that Meredith and Seth from Salt Lake did have an 11 episode run on a podcast that was featured on the show, but it hasn't made a new episode in over a year. So
11 episode run is kind of insane. I
that's an
love that
insane
that's
count.
yeah. It's like a one season show that
But
ran
yeah,
and then ran its course.
I feel like podcasting in general, I mean, is it so boring to talk about podcasting on a podcast? But
I think it's meta.
it's so meta. It's like now how on Bravo shows they'll break the fourth wall and be like, oh yeah, Kyle said this on Watch Happens Live about me. And Craig's like saying that. You know, Craig has a podcast. Did you know that?
No, I mean,
Craig
but
and
it should, it
Austin,
doesn't surprise me at this
it
point.
is the worst title for a podcast you will ever hear in your life.
Okay.
Pillows and beer.
You can tell it was two straight guys who either they came up with it themselves or some producer came to them and was like, here's six possible titles, chat GPT style. And, you know, first of all, that's terrible.
Well, it's because Craig has a pillow business and Austin has a beer. I think formerly produced made beer, but it's like, oh my God, it's so stupid. Anyway, go on.
Okay, we are just coming back from a segment that was cut, but I think we'll talk about it on the Patreon. So this is us teasing something that's related to podcasting on our Patreon. Okay.
I thought you were going to tell me that there was podcasting occurring in a theater piece, like that there was some sort of like, have we seen podcasting on the stage yet in a theater piece? I don't know. I can't think of anything, but
No, but I do want to pose this question. I asked you this recently. I asked you and Hunter this recently.
okay.
We're talking about contemporary musicals in general. I
Oh.
promise this has a point. I'm not, this isn't like a random transition because
No.
talking about contemporary things. So, like, the idea of podcasting being spoken about in media is such a modern thing. Like, for example, in like that movie Bodies, 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 Rachel Sennett's character is a podcaster. And that's like her, one of her things, you know?
Ahead of her time, but anyway.
Totally. In contemporary theater, which I'm sure we're going to see it soon, you know, in some like kitchen table play about a family, the teen daughter might have a podcast or something. You know what I mean? Here was the question that I posed to you and Hunter recently, and I'm curious to hear what our listeners think. Listeners who are hearing this episode, if you'll know on the Patreon for Drama Plus, Connor and I always pose a question that we ask our listeners to answer. And here's my question. Has there been the book of a musical written for a modern contemporary show in the, we'll say the last 10 years that hasn't felt cringy?
Yeah,
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
I'm willing to be proven wrong. I think that there's a lot of plays that have been written post-pandemic that have talked about the pandemic, for example, that I think are actually really interesting and have good things to say. You know, we're 5 years past it at this point. What I'm talking about is like the shoehorning of social issues into the book of a musical. You know, a lot of people said the Jagged Little Pill was like an after-school special with all of its different topics. Ironically, that book of a musical won a Tony. So I'm not saying it's a good book of a musical, but I'm saying like something that's non-cringe. And I want our listeners to think about new musicals this season, last season, you know, the last couple of years that don't feel cringy. You know, like Kimberly Akimbo, I feel it to be, it feels contemporary, even though it takes place in 1999. But again, it's a period piece then. So that's my question.
I love that question. I need to give it a think myself. We'll have to revisit this. I remember during the pandemic, we were defending Jagged Little Pill on the podcast and how they put a lot of issues, quote unquote, issues onto the stage. It did feel like they were putting as many social topics in it as possible at times. And I remember comparing it to Rent, which I know is weird, but Rent put tons into its material, but maybe just did it in a more effective way. I mean, Rent's a masterpiece, let's be honest.
It is.
But it's interesting that Rent is also giving you a character from every single letter of the LGBTQ plus community. They're giving you the AIDS epidemic, poverty, race, class.
Protest. Yeah, you're so right.
Everything. Protest. But why? So why are we okay with Rent and not something like, say, a Jagged Little Pill or say a Redwood? And then we're criticizing it, but maybe it's just all in how it's presented and the writing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because Rent did it so effectively. I wonder if at the time people were like, they're putting a ton in this. You know, I don't know. Jen Tepper, get on the horn. Jen, we need you.
Rent has been so top of mind for me in the last couple of weeks with Jonathan Larson Project.
Can we call Jen right now and call and have her join the podcast live?
That'd be hilarious. Okay, Rent has been on my mind recently with the Jonathan Larson Project happening at the Orpheum. And when this episode comes out, there's only going to be a few more chances left to see it. If you're a Tick, Tick, Boom fan, a Rent fan, obviously, Jonathan Larson curious type person, I really, really recommend going to see it. You could obviously listen to the beautiful album that was released, but I really feel like this production brings it to life in a new way. And you can't miss Friends of the Pod, Andy Mientis and Taylor Iman Jones, who are delivering two absolutely brilliant performances in the show.
Powerhouses, for sure. I'm so glad you got a chance to see it.
Me too. I know. And I'm disappointed that it's not going to run longer. Broadway and off-Broadway are just a gamble these days. We have this conversation constantly. But it happened with Swept Away, obviously, earlier this year. I don't think anything else has really announced an early closing in the new year, thankfully. But it's very difficult. And if you don't catch on, and in my eyes, something like Jonathan Larson Project, sorry, the Jonathan Larson Project, should be, you have built-in audiences that are already interested in it. And so I don't know. Maybe it's a sign of, people keep saying that a new Gaga pop album is a sign of a recession incoming. And so maybe that was true with Mayhem's arrival.
Wait, do people really say that? That's kind of hilarious.
There's a few other things that they said was a recession indicator. And one of them was a Lady Gaga pop album, you know, because obviously Chromatica, I don't know when Monster Ball came out, but
the fame Monster.
Yeah, that's true. Monster Ball was the tour.
Monster Ball was the tour.
Got it. It's the fame Monster, and then it was the Monster Ball tour.
Yes. Okay, so there has been so much happening in the theater world lately, and it's just going to get even crazier as we head into April and May, and with all the shows opening, obviously Tony season is upon us, and I feel like we still have no clue what's going to happen with awards this year. Like, you know, in past drama seasons, we've been able to predict and pretty fairly get there throughout the year. But this year, I feel like it's without really seeing a lot of these shows open. I mean, we still have things like Floyd Collins and Dead Outlaw and Real Women Have Curves that we are not going to know anything about for like weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, especially what critics and the industry thinks of these shows for awards. But I'm more interested in talking about like our experiences with some of the shows and what we've enjoyed so far that we've had a chance to see, because obviously we're not reviewing them, but what are some other things that you want to highlight that you've enjoyed visiting this year?
I mean, I've spoken about Sunset Boulevard, I think, any chance I can, and I don't want to talk about it too much more but it is truly, I mean, I think I've decided, I'm sorry to everything else. It is like my favorite thing I've seen in years. It really is.
While you're wearing the merch.
Literally
it.
Wearing the merch that was like $40 for one little, I don't know if it was stitched or if it was, this was printed on. It looks like it was sewn in, but I love it so much. Nicole Scherzinger, Tom Francis, beyond brilliant.
Is Joe Gillis tucked?
I think he's wearing like a
not a courtesy, not a privacy,
not a chastity.
How do you solve a problem like Joe Gillis's boxer briefs?
I think that there's like a padding. It's like a padded, almost like when you see guys in the Calvin Klein ads, they sort of smooth out. I don't know if there's like a cup in there or what's happening. They sort of smooth out the parts that may be left to the imagination, which is respectful because I think that would maybe distract from what's happening otherwise. Anyways, love Sunset Boulevard. I truly believe it to be just a brilliant masterpiece. And I'm so glad I've gotten to see it twice now.
Well, I will say when I saw A Streetcar Named Desire this past weekend, starring Paul Mescal, I really buried the lead on this pod.
I know.
We talked about him in that show on this podcast for years at this point. So in fact, wasn't it Gavin Creel who was like, where there's a will, there's a way. You're going to see Paul Mescal in Streetcar.
Yes.
I think that's the show he said that about, wasn't it? It is. Oh
it
my
is.
Goodness.
It is.
There's a scene where he strips down, like he takes off his shirt and he puts on another shirt and he takes off his pants and he's in like a boxer brief and he's bulging.
Oh,
but
do you think that it's like a Sunset Boulevard boxer brief situation?
I don't know, because I was also sitting very far away at Streetcar, so it was hard to tell. It's hard to tell.
All right, this calls for a return trip.
I have to go back. But no, Dylan, I'm so with you on Sunset. It's everything. It's everything. It's everything. It's everything. And I fully kid about the Joe Gillis boxer briefs, but I guess I'll also have to return to give it a closer look.
Yeah, I guess you will. Okay, other favorite things. More recently, got to see Operation Mincemeat. I know you haven't gotten the chance to see it yet.
Tell me what you thought. Like, oh my gosh.
Okay. Hunter and I got to see this one together, and we both agreed it sort of like feels like the offspring of Hamilton 6. I even said there's hints of Come From Away in it, and I think that anyone who's seen it would maybe understand that. It's a lesser known story that they're telling in an interesting way with a smaller cast playing multiple roles. I will say, is it too British for Broadway is the question that seems to be on everybody's lips. The reviews all seem to like it, and with the exception of the New York Times, which was middling in a way, but I thought it was absolutely fantastic, funny. It keeps your attention the entire time. You just have to buy in. And I say this to anyone who has yet to see it. You have to make the decision very early on. This is what Hunter and I said to each other, to pay attention to every single word that's being said, because it's almost like seeing Hamilton for the first time. Because there are even some like rap elements to it. It's very spoken word, sing-songy. There is one show-stopping number in the show, performed by Jack Malone, who is the Olivier winning performer in the show. It was one of the coolest experiences I've had in the theater.
Really? Oh my God, I'm so excited. Did the audience seem into it, the show?
Sucked in. Oh really? Yeah, for sure. Fun fact about Operation Mincemeat. This is the first musical to play the Golden since Avenue Q closed like 15 years ago. And the last time a musical played the Golden, it won Best Musical at the Tonys.
Oh my God.
I don't know what that means. It was just extended through next February. And yeah, February 2026.
Wow.
The first extension was like 4 more weeks. Then it was like 8 more weeks. And now it's like a full year.
That's amazing.
I mean, obviously, you can maybe throw this in there too. The best play that just played there won. And it was a play with music.
Ooh. And the year before that, another Tony winner was in it, Top Dog Underdog, for best revival of a play.
There you go. It is
the lucky house.
I do think it's one of my favorite theaters, with the exception of that basement where you have to go to the bathroom and the merch is all down there. It's frustrating to me, but I've loved almost every single play I've seen there. Prima Facie, Hangmen, Top Dog Underdog. We saw Hillary and Clinton there. Three Tall Women. I know A Doll's House Part 2 is there. So it is one of my favorite theaters. I think that because it's a lot of plays, you're able to have a constant revolving door of, you know, tenants, but this is going to be there for a while. And what about
excited.
You? I know you mentioned Streetcar. Anything else?
I just have to say, I saw Othello, and Andrew Burnap is one of the best we have. He makes a meal out of Cassio in Othello, and I just love him. He is such a dynamic actor. He looks amazing. I need him to drop the skincare routine now. He has a really cute haircut in it. And I forgot how juicy the plot of Othello is. I think I always think of it as like a war epic or something, where they're like making speeches about like battles and honor and stuff. But it's really like, it's not. It's just it's a tragedy about jealousy and lies and ambition. And
isn't it where the green-eyed monster?
Yeah, it is. And when they said it, I was like, oh, damn, I forgot that that's from this.
And Beast with Two Backs?
Someone recently saw Anne Juliet.
Well, I did see Anne Juliet recently, but those aren't any references.
You know what's funny? I was watching a matinee of Othello while you were watching a matinee of Anne Juliet. And when they said Beast with Two Backs, I remembered in Anne Juliet when Shakespeare's like doing his like, oh, I also came up with this line. I came up with this one. And I was like, LOL, Dylan is watching this while I'm watching actual Shakespeare's, and Anne Juliet was better than Othello. Anyway.
And then the next day I saw Fat Ham. So it was a Shakespeare sort of weekend.
Wow, 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 wow.
I was thinking to myself, I love Shakespeare.
And something rotten's going to the UK.
We just ran the Female Gaze podcast talking about She's the Man, which is an adaptation of Twelfth Night. Like, there's Shakespeare is so with us and so present always. Name a single Shakespeare play, and there's probably been sort of a modern adaptation of it. The Lion King.
Oh my God. Well, and Romeo and Juliet just happened on Broadway.
Yeah.
I wonder what's going to happen with that come Tonys.
I think it might be remembered with, like, friend of the pod, Gabby Beans.
Oh, I would love a Beans nom. I feel like scenic design was awesome for that.
Yeah.
It's the big reveal that I guess...
We'll see. I mean, like, Stranger Things has yet to open. As far as, like, other new plays, I mean, here we are talking about Tony Awards and whatnot, but their only other new play that has to open this season is Stranger Things, The First Shadow. So
got you. That's the last one.
It's the last one. And I don't know, like, if Dorian Gray has, like, a, I know it's a lot
that
of screens.
Opens this
I don't
week.
Really know what the set is.
I want to see that.
Connor, TBH, there's not much left to start previews this season. By April 12th, everything will have been open, or at least been started performances.
Why does it feel like so much still has to come? I guess because I haven't seen everything. Like,
as of the time this episode comes out, sometimes Old Friends will have started, but then it's Floyd Collins, Stranger Things, Just in Time, Real Women Have Curves, Pirates, the Penzance musical, and Dead Outlaw. Other than that, everything else is in performances. Unless something sneaks in Sidney Brustein style.
Well, would it be The Streetcar Named Desire with Paul Mescal? I had heard the tea that he's going to go film the Beatles movie, so he's not. Wouldn't move with it if it moved. But hey, this production has been kicking around for years, so it would not surprise me if, like, a year from now they were like, by the way, we're coming back to Broadway. Come see us next March. You know what I mean? Like, coming to Broadway. That's a theory I have about this. Yeah. Just because, I mean, it fits so well at BAM. And again, I skipped over this because I was too busy talking about Paul Mescal's Bulge, but Patsy Farron is unreal as Blanche.
Who we gagged for in the UK.
I know. And we tried so hard to book her for the pod too.
I know.
Oh, well, maybe one day. She's incredible. She's incredible. That was the Jodie Comer year, though. So, like, everyone else in Streetcar won their Olivier's, but Jodie Comer won the lead actress one, and both so deserving. And I'll say it again. I really do feel like it's so strange that there's not a category for best solo performance, because it's a totally different beast. Every performance is different, obviously, but it just feels like a little unfair, whether it goes in their favor or not, to put a solo performer up against someone who's in a piece with other actors, even if it's just one other actor, you know?
Yeah, I mean, our childhood theater director, Bonnie LoConte, may she rest in peace, used to always say that 90% of acting is reacting. Is that what she'd say? Or was it 10%?
She would.
It was one of those percentiles.
Yeah. Sarah is acting against herself in Dorian Gray. I can't wait to see that. I also really want to see Andrew Scott in Vanya.
Another solo piece. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So any All of Us Strangers fans out there can have a two-show day that features both leading men for that movie. You could see Streetcar with Paul and Vanya with Andrew Scott. Okay, anything else interesting? We saw Redwood.
Zach Pizer has such a beautiful 11 o'clock number.
Oh, I sobbed like a baby.
Oh my gosh. Well, there was a line that came a little bit after that where I also cried. And I wasn't, to quote Dani Minogue when she was given the boys category in the X Factor, when it was 2010 or 2011, you'll have to.
Was it the 1D year?
The 1D year.
It was 2010.
I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
So I wasn't expecting to cry. And it touched me. It really did. It really did. And I feel like a lot of the visual stuff in Redwood has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's a thrill to see a star as big as Adina on a Broadway stage. I feel the same way about, like, Audra and Gypsy, Nicole and Sunset Boulevard. We're so lucky to have these musical theater divas that they rarely miss performances. They're belting their face off. It's a special time. And I'm happy that Adina's back on Broadway at the Niederlander, which is where, obviously, not to bring it back, but Rent took place.
It all comes back to Rent, doesn't it?
I guess in this episode in particular, it does.
What else was I going to say? What else have I seen that I wanted to talk about on the pod?
I feel like you're at the theater, like, every night.
I know. Oh, in Othello, I just wanted to say, now, while Jake Gyllenhaal wasn't necessarily following the iambic pentameter, to quote our friend Devin, he He took the iambic pentameter as a suggestion, not as a direction. But he looks so hot. And I kept thinking to myself, that's the man that All Too Well and All Too Well 10 minutes version from the vault, Taylor's version, is about.
Right.
And it shook me to my core, Dylan. I haven't seen him since All Too Well came out. I, of course, saw him in both the shows at the Hudson, Sunday in the Park, and then that play that
Seawall
he did.
Seawall of Life.
Seawall of Life. And of course, it's like, oh my God, he's so hot. He's also so, he's such a good actor. But something about him in these army pants and the camo and the bicep veins. I was thinking, let's just say I got distracted in my head while I was watching him on stage. So
I don't prefer him as with his shaved head, but is he shaved head in Love and Other Drugs? I think that's his hottest performance.
It's not shaved, but it's a shortcut. He's so hot in that movie. And they let him be hairy in it too, which I love.
I loved him in that. I think he's hot in that. And he's hot in a way in Brokeback Mountain, but I don't think that like it behooves the character to like, I'm like more of a Heath girl.
I'm more of a Heath girl. Surprisingly more of a Heath girl in that movie.
Yeah. Yeah, didn't expect you to go Heath with it, but
now are you more of a Heath girl in? Well, you haven't seen 10 Things, which is a Shakespeare adaptation.
Yeah.
Did Heath Ledger ever take to the stage?
I don't think he did. I don't think so.
Man, I feel like I would have loved to have seen him in real life. I mean, we loved him back. I mean, we were still young enough to like appreciate him as an actor back then. You know, obviously.
What else is captivating your brain in the world of pop culture, trends, gossip, gay themes?
The thing that's got a chokehold on me in my brain that I literally can't stop thinking about and I giggle with fits every time I see it is the gif of Carla Sofia Gascon as Emilia Perez smirking and hiding a gun while looking out a window.
It is so crazy. What's crazier is the way that people on the free website Twitter/X find the most brilliant either lyrics, quotes, references to attach to it. It fits so brilliantly.
Just amazing. I've just seen so many crazy ones. Obviously, people are using it for the Jason Isaacs character on White Lotus. And it hits every time. I'm obsessed.
When White Lotus season 2 aired like a year ago or 2 years ago, was it mentioned in every single episode of Drama with Connor and Dylan McDowell? Because I do feel that season 3 has been mentioned in every single episode.
Really?
Since it started airing in January.
I'm sure it was mentioned all the time. I mean, I love season 2. My ranking is seasons 1, 2, 3, at least so far.
Oh, I think I'm 2, 1, 3.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I just felt in season 1, and here we are doing a White Lotus discussion. Season 1 was so fresh. It was so revolutionary. The shocking things these people said was truly shocking that I feel like we're just a little more used to it now, the things that are happening. Although I will say there is some shocking plotting going on this season. And I still am obsessed with Amy Lou Wood.
Brilliant.
She's everything. Like, I just want her to have the world in general as an actress and as her character. But it's the Carrie Coon, Leslie Bibb, Michelle Monaghan. Monaghan?
I think it's Monaghan. Yeah.
Their dynamic, I am just thrilled. I am enthralled. I love them. The writing is so great for them too.
And it's unraveling now. It's so good. The family with Jason Isaacs, Parker Posey, Patrick Schwarzenegger, Sam Nivola, and then the young woman who plays the sister, who I only know as the sister.
The sister. No, she's truly the sister. No one knows her name.
They're either known by their character name or their actor name, and I can't explain otherwise. Like, Leslie Bibb is Leslie Bibb.
Uh-huh. She's Kate on the show, but yeah.
Oh, see, I wouldn't have known that.
I only know that because last night they said her name and I made a point to clock it. But no, she's Leslie Bibb. The German manager is the German manager.
Right, I wouldn't know his name otherwise.
Yeah.
And Belinda is Belinda simply because we knew her already.
Yeah, and then, of course, Belinda's son.
Yeah. But Pornchai is Pornchai because it's a very interesting name.
Yeah. And I do call Lachlan and Saxon by their names, but Parker Posey is Parker Posey.
Right.
And Jason Isaacs is Lucius Malfoy.
Yeah. Inexplicably so.
He's doing, unfortunately, his writing is, they're not giving him much variety in the writing. Like, he's just a man in crisis, but he's doing a great job. I wish that.
Right. Like, I feel like it started here and it went here. Yes. It's had to stay and it's sort of like kind of gone down a little bit. I'm like making a chart sort of with my hand right now, but
yeah, again, not a writer, but I wish that they would have put the pressure on his character maybe like midway or end of episode two or into episode three, because starting it out in episode one and then just full steam ahead made that happen, I think. Like, yes. And now there's, we've just been waiting for days and days and days for it to kind of resolve. Personally, for me, the tension on that has fizzled a little bit with what's going to happen to him.
I have personally, a theory.
Even though they're holding him with the gun and stuff. Okay, tell me.
Because no one's coming for him. No one knows where he is. But someone has a connection to him in the outside world. Leslie Bibb recognized Parker Posey from having been in a baby shower with her.
Oh my God.
And I wonder if she's going to either hear from or... Because I can't remember if they kept their... gave away their phones. I know that Michelle Monaghan has her phone because she's been talking to her fiance husband. But I can't remember if Kate, as you called her earlier...
I bet Bibb has her.
I feel like she's going to like mention to someone, or she'll see a news article about him and then be like, oh my God, he's here. And that'll be how they find him.
Twist. Oh, I love it. I love it.
Because Chekhov's gun has been taken out of play from him.
Right. That's so true. And I don't love fantasy sequences, but I guess that did add to the character, like him imagining like what's happening with the gun, et cetera, et cetera.
Did you know it was fantasy?
I figured. I've watched enough TV to know.
I figured the same.
Yeah. But I guess it does add that little extra dynamic to keep the ante high for him, because he's in such a state of numbness in reality that in his dreams, he's at the end of his rope. So maybe I take back bits of what I said, per usual. I mean, I texted a friend the other day who was asking me my thoughts on Sadie Sink, my friend Kyle. Shout out to Kyle. And I was like, I'm kind of mixed on her acting, but I think I love her. And then I wrote back, me in a nutshell, which is so true. Like, I can be like so mixed on somebody. I'm like, no, but I'm obsessed with her. Like, I need Sadie Sink.
I think about any, even like, well, yeah.
John Anytime, Proctor, we didn't mention that. John Proctor is also opening.
John Proctor's opening, and she is in the All Too Well 10-minute version music video. I wonder how Jake feels. If Taylor has the time, I feel she should go to the opening of John Proctor Must Die. I don't think we see Taylor Swift at enough Broadway in general.
Totally. If she decided to endorse a Broadway show, it's going to have a healthy run. I want her to go see Smash, which I also have not seen. But I want Smash to have a healthy run. And so I want Taylor to go give her, you know, seal of approval on Smash. And
J-Hud is promoting it heavily as a producer and former cast member Veronica Moore.
Period.
Yeah, I'm still so curious about Smash.
So many friends in that show.
I know. Okay, anything else? Like, we've talked about White Lotus a lot. We talked about Gaga a lot over the last couple of weeks. Like, I don't know when we're going to get another Twin Talk. Anything else that sort of will capture this moment as far as something that's like keeping your mind occupied? Obviously, we've talked about Severance a couple of times on the podcast. I'm still very early on in my Severance journey. Any new, like, other new music coming out soon?
Yeah. Okay, well, Ariana is doing an extended version of...
Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine. It's called, like, Brighter Days, or Better Days. Or I think it's called Brighter Days.
Okay, fun.
And she's doing an extended intro, End of the World, the first song, which I love.
It's an amazing song.
Wait, if you haven't heard her, like, live version of the album that she released in the fall, she does that song live. It is incredible. Oh, my God. I'm obsessed with her voice. And so she's doing an extended one of that. And then I think 5 or 6 additional songs. So excited. It's always interesting when an artist decides to extend an album rather than save it for the next. But I guess if she's still in that era, quote unquote,
yeah,
she'll do it. I mean, Gaga did it with the Fame Monster, right? So that's a call back to...
There's so many through lines in this episode. It's crazy.
Or do we just like, is the carousel just always spinning for us? With
that is possible. Wait, one more thing to call back to a former thing. I mentioned that I listened to Michelle Collins' daily podcast. On her show, one of her co-hosts, she has like revolving co-hosts every day, like it's different people, but you can always count on her friend Abby, who is part of her show on Sirius. And she said that they had Walter Goggins on an episode of the Sirius version of Michelle Collins' show. Okay. And they learned that it's pronounced Walton Goggins, not Walter Goggins. So it has to be true. Another question that I need to have everyone write in. Is it true? Is it Walton Goggins spelled Walter? I leave it at that.
That's crazy. Okay, dose of drama. Anything?
That's my drama.
Yeah, that is huge drama.
It's also, we've also discussed names and pronunciation today. And the idea that your name can be spelled one way, but pronounced a completely different way. Like letters that aren't even in it.
That's nuts.
It's just so all right. I don't know.
Our friend Mary D said that he's like a classic upstate New York nudist. And I kind of just, it's perfect for him.
Love it.
Oh, I love it. All right, Dylan. Well, it was so fun to talk about all this stuff. I feel like my head is spinning and I can't wait for all the shows on Broadway to come, as well as the new music. Miley Cyrus is coming out with a new album at the end of May. And you know, she's my girl. So I can't wait for that too.
A summer album.
Ooh, which Endless Summer Vacation should have been a summer album, but it came out in like March, I think.
It did. Yeah. I'm eagerly anticipating new albums from like Harry Styles. Niall Horan is, speaking of Ariana extending her album, he seems to be doing something with his Heartbreak Weather album that came out literally the day of the pandemic in 2020. So I'm excited about that as well.
Wow.
But last year was like the pop girl spring. And I feel as though it's just been, they've all taken their feet off our necks for a minute, which has been nice.
They have. Chapel did come out with the Giver as a single. But does that mean an album's coming this year? Who can say?
With her, say. I don't think so.
You don't think? Okay.
Maybe this fall. I don't know. I'm thinking about it all
Ooh.
Of a sudden.
Okay, anyway, Dylan, this was so fun. As I say on Drama Plus, I usually say this is so much fun, but it's time to go now.
Yes. This feels like a pilot for a Drama Plus episode that was shopped around and then ultimately like going, went like mainstream, aka main feed.
We decided to put it on main. Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. But everyone needs to follow us, of course, at The Drama Podcast on Instagram, on Twitter/X, and at The Drama Pod on TikTok. Oh, we're also on Blue Sky at Throne
Yes.
Podcast.
And I'm at Dylan McDowell. Connor is at Connor McDowell. And Connor, I will see you next time.
Drama! Drama!